it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Oi, oi, I'm Jimmy Bullard, and this is me old muck of Fenners. We're back together, son. How are ya?
Hi, Bully. Great to be back working with you. Well, what are we doing here, though?
We're starting a football club in podcast form. The only thing we know, it's called FC Bullard. After that, it's all up for grabs.
So, we haven't got any players, we haven't got a kit, we haven't got a club badge, we haven't got a stadium.
Correct. FC Bullard. Welcome to the club.
Why are we doing this?
For the love of the game, mate.
For the love of rugby.
In today's episode,
pressure washing workouts.
Texting Dan's mum.
Also about pressure washers.
Plus, Quinns go toe-to-toe with Bordeaux.
Northampton in full flow.
And nobody beats Leinster four times in a row.
Now, on with the show.
Coley, we're back. No games for us, mate. How was your weekend?
Good, Ben. I spent Saturday watching three and a half games of rugby on TV. And this morning I've taken my boys to rugby training and then came back, started watching Exeter Toulouse, and then had to go to a birthday party, watched a bit on my phone, and then came home. So yeah, I've actually probably done more rugby things by not playing rugby than I have if I had played rugby.
Because you end up basically doing a rugby marathon, don't you? You just sit there, like, games on, and even when you're doing stuff, it's like the game's on in the background. You kind of hear something happen, so you like swing your head around, it's like, oh, what have I missed? Someone scored. And then like away you go, carry on. And then you're right. I'm more engrossed in rugby over this weekend than I am if I was actually playing.
Yeah, it teed me up though, because obviously probably the first game properly watched was Quinns Bordeaux, and that was one hell of a game. And that kind of got me in the mood for Europe. And then the other games were a bit one-sided, so.
I felt a bit bad actually. So the decking needed pressure washing. So my wife was like, yeah, I'll do it. And off she went. And then her back went after about 30 minutes. So I was like, yeah, I'll take over. You know, this is a job for me. I can do this one. Mate, my back gone after about 5 minutes. Oh my God. Oh. Like bending over and, you know, like the jet wash that like has a circle on it and it spins and you have to like scrub it. Oh my God. My back had gone after about 5 minutes. So I did it in like 3 minute intervals for about 4 hours.
You think it's really good, don't you? You start off and you're like, oh, this looks awesome. And then you're like, oh, this is tedious. And as you say, my spine is in absolute pieces.
I was mowing the lawn. She was doing that, being efficient. You know, the sun was out. The kids were running around outside. It was lovely. Like a afternoon of doing things and getting jobs done. And then I was like, oh my God, sod that. I'll do it in like 3 minute intervals. But it's very satisfying doing decking. Seeing the grime come up and everything like that and seeing the finished product, it's like, yes, it's a rewarding job.
Oh, mate, I have slabs up like around our house and you sort of obviously get dirty for a year, but you don't really notice the dirt. But then you clean them and you're like, holy crap, they were dirty. So yeah. So you just reminded me, my mum texted me on Friday asking, morning, at work, can your dad borrow your pressure washer? So I'm just going to text her back. You know when you get a text message when you're at work and you just, you see it and you can't respond because you're in between like meetings or something like that. Yeah, that's my mum. So I'm just texting her back now. Hello, yes, you can borrow my...
You know, you better message her back, mate, because it's now Sunday. It's now Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm guessing your dad probably needed it for the weekend.
Yeah, probably. I better put that. Hello, yes, you are, if still needed. Mum's probably been sat by a phone all weekend fuming, just waiting for me to text back. It's when you ring, you know, when you randomly ring your parents and they're like, you ring your mum up, just, you forgot about it and they should be off with you. And you're like, why are you off with, what's wrong? He's like, you haven't texted me back. Oh, all right. Yeah. Sorry about that. That's where I'll be right now. Anyway, sorry. Yes. You can borrow my pressure washer if still needed. Busy with watching rugby all weekend. There we go. Sorry. I'll just get this out of the way. How was yours?
Yeah. Mum, dad can borrow the pressure washer as long as he also does my patio. Thanks very much. Yeah. Have a good week.
Tell him to do some core beforehand so his back doesn't go after 10 minutes.
Make sure you theragun his scaps and his triceps, otherwise they'll seize up after and he'll have to do 3 minute intervals. So anyway, so yeah, that was pretty much my weekend, and the kids were here, there, everywhere, parties and all sorts going on. But right, should we get into it then? Because it was a hell of a weekend for rugby.
Yes, it was.
Let's start with Quins at Bordeaux. It finished 42-41 in the sunshine.
It was 30 degrees. It said it was like 29, 30 degrees. See, Bordeaux came on with like umbrellas to cool them down.
Yeah.
I was like, fair play. You should have thought, it's a random thing, Quins might come to in 30 degree heat, obviously not being used to it. They might fade a bit, but say, fair play, they kept going and obviously scored at the end. And yeah, it was a hell of a performance from them. As we said on the pod, Ben, if it's a team that could go toe-to-toe with Bordeaux and score in batches, which Quins did, it was Harlequins, and fair play to them, they did. They took the chances when they had toe-to-toe, end-to-end stuff, and it was a really enjoyable game, Ben.
It was. We did say it, didn't we? We said, like, Quins, if they bring you into that game of, like, we score, you score, we score, you score, and it gets loose, like, they're so good at it, and they just create opportunities, hang in there. I'm not sure the heat actually helped Bordeaux, because Ben Tamiafuna is a big piece of kit and he looked absolutely exhausted. But big shout out to Finn Baxter, Coley. Like, you know, obviously Marlon not being there, Danny Kerr not being there, some like high quality players from Quins missing. But he did a great job, right?
Oh yeah, well, say Finn Baxter, you speak to Marlon and stuff like that, I think he's been a fantastic player, and probably scrummaging maybe hasn't been his strongest point. You know, that's the probably only weak point in his game. But Yorkshire against Tamiafuna, he's got about the top of the scrum this season. I think he's been a massive season for Baxter, and it's fair play to him and Will Collier on the other side. Both went 70 odd minutes, say, in the heat, you know, dominated the scrum pretty much. And also Quins, I mean, we talk about end-to-end stuff, but I think the final two tries were Maul tries, weren't they? So it's, you know what I mean, that comes to the full pack, that comes from your front five. So yeah, credit to those guys. They were my players of the game.
Do you know what I love, Coley, is I don't know Finn Baxter, and he did a hell of a shift. But I remember Marla was like, yeah, I like trying bringing through this Finn Baxter, spending a lot of time with him, you know, really trying to build him and, you know, show him the way, the arts of scrummaging, everything like that. And he was at under-20s at the time. And they did this like quick fire questions with Finn Baxter for the under-20s. And it was like, what would you be if you weren't a rugby player? You know, all these different questions. And then one was it, who's your favourite player? And he went, Mako Vunipola. Oh, Marlon was absolutely gutted. He couldn't believe it. There's this young prodigy that he'd invested since academy and spent time with and like watched his games and given him all the tips, only for him to turn around and say his idol was someone was probably Quinn's biggest rivals in Saracens. I mean, Mako's a hell of a player, of course he is, but oh, I remember watching that. I just remember just absolutely pissing myself and Marlon being like, what? What's he just said?
Totally taking the wind out of sails, yeah.
I don't know Finn Baxter, but Finn Baxter, you're an absolute legend.
He is. He got up a notch on my book with that one.
Will Porter as well.
Will Porter, I'll say another standout performance. You know, he comes into the team. Quinn's obviously rested. Danny Kerr and Marla, based on, I guess, because they've been away with England and they've played the past three games. You know, he stepped in and was seamless. There's a lot of young guys in that Quinn side, and which I'm sure they will try and, well, they'll keep hold of them, but they're definitely, the future looks bright for that Quinn's team. I mean, they've got players like that stepping up to the plate.
Yeah, without doubt. I mean, Will Porter, for me, you know, he was at WAS and then he went to Bristol, now at Quins. Like, he's a really, really tidy player, and obviously learning a hell of a lot from Danny Kerr. I just thinking about it though, like, I was just really impressed with him. He played against us actually beginning of the season actually, and had a great game that day. You know, he is a sharp player, and actually if he keeps putting performance at that, he's someone that actually I didn't mention the other week in terms of, you know, the nines that may make the tour. And he was lively, kicked well, passed well, was on the end of things. You know, the Don Brandt break coming through tackles, then offloaded to him with a chip and chase. Like, that's a great team try. Of course, it's Don Brandt was phenomenal as well, but, you know, the vision to chip over, regather and all that. So I just thought he had a hell of a performance. So, and he's definitely, you can see his game is growing more and more the more he obviously spends time with Danny Kerr. So, no, huge Quins performance. Marcus again, like, lively, such a threat, makes them tick. I just love how Quins kind of, they just create opportunities and they kind of make it look easy at times, how they do it. And even the last try, I know there were sort of hisses as there are in France for a forward pass, but who cares? Great try again. Just like taking on defenders, straight, flat of the line, everyone running square, boom, just pick them off. Great offload through the tackle, try. And I just thought, you know, Quins deserved it, to be honest with you. I mean, it came down to the kick, really, with Luku, who doesn't normally miss.
No, and I say, especially when the winger had sort of stepped inside and made it. Normally in those situations, the wingers often literally score in the corner, just weren't just scoring the try, but they actually ran in field, tried to get it an easier kick, which you would say is the, well, it obviously was the right thing to do, but obviously still missed the kick, which is very surprising. But, you know, sometimes when pressure comes on in these situations, then, yeah, mistakes happen, and Quins fully deserve their victory.
I've never played at Bordeaux, but it looked a hell of a place to play rugby.
I think it's an old, it's not an old Olympic stadium, but it's basically, this is when Harry Potter jumped over the edge and fell down the fell down about 10 foot, didn't he? Just disappeared off the edge of the pitch.
Vanished.
Vanished, yeah. But I remember at half time, you basically have to walk, talk about a long walk back to the changing rooms. This walk must take 5 minutes, honestly. It's like under the stadium, round, like under, round, through a tunnel, up. The change rooms are miles away. So, yeah, it's a great place. And so when the crowd gets going, obviously, we talk about French fans all the time, the passion they have. It's, which I think you saw, even like, I watched the Clermont-Ulster game and Clermont's bounced up and down. It's good to lose today. They're bouncing up and down. There's something different about playing in French stadiums. And say for Quince to go there, missing a couple of good players or resting a couple of good players, Bordeaux, take them on, score 42 points. A phenomenal game, credit to them.
Yeah, absolutely. So is half-time there? Are you saying it's like, you know, you've seen that clip of The Simpsons where Grandpa Simpson yeah. walks in the door, puts his hat and coat on, yeah. does a circle, puts his hat and coat back on and walks straight back out. So you basically walk in... Have
yeah,
a drink
that's it.
And walk straight back out for the second half.
That's it. In one door, touch the back of the changing room and then back out. You just turn around and come back out. Pretty much what it is. Yeah.
Grab a carb gel and straight back out for the second half. Let's go, lads. But huge, huge credit to Quinns. Like, found a way. Unbelievable result. And, you know, a semi-final, which is something to look forward to. I mean, they obviously now face Toulouse, which... Let's be honest, it isn't going to be a low-scoring game between those two, is it? Like, we're going to see tries.
Based on Toulouse-Exeter, yes, there will be plenty of points on offer. Because, say, Toulouse were... Well, it was steady in the first half, wasn't it? I think it was 17-16 at half-time. And then there was a 20-minute period where Toulouse literally kick-off, you know, they scored almost like kick-off, exit, whatever, got the ball back, scored. Exeter kick-off, it goes to Willis, bust three tackles thing, pass, offload, score, and you're just like, the French, that ability of Toulouse just to literally turn it, oh, we need to score now. Oh, there's four tries, there's the game, thanks very much. As a neutral watching that game, it's brilliant rugby and you're watching it. You feel a bit for Exeter because we've all been on the end of like, you're in a tight game and then literally there's a 20-minute period where you miss a tackle, they score. You can literally do no right. No matter what you do, even like Toulouse, they sort of lose the ball but it goes backwards, picks it up, flicks out of the back. Oh, there's a 20-minute line break. So you force them into an error, which the ball's then bounced their way, they've picked up, wing has gone down the inside ball to, well, Ramos has gone inside, pass me the United score. Cheers. Like, you just, when you have that sort of wave against you, it's a very, you know, you go into the sixth tenure and you're like, right, guys, let's get our next job right. You get it right. They still score and you're like, oh, for fuck's sakes, we're not going to win today.
Yeah, you're like, we actually did really well first half, lads. And then you're like, it's 45-19, you're like, fuck me, it's hot. Fuck me, they're good.
Yeah.
How good are this lot, eh?
Yeah, I'm just going to... I'm enjoying them playing. I've got a really good seat here watching this game.
Crowd are good.
Yeah. Well, great experience, yeah.
No, like, it's... I don't know what to say, really, because, like you say, they're a young team and obviously winning last week, going there, and at halftime, I should think, you know, their coaches, them, they must have all been like 17, 16, be like, boys, we're so well in this. We are going great guns, but... Toulouse just turned it up and just kind of, like you say, like offload stuck. They kind of just went through the gears, didn't they? And my gosh, they look pretty frightening really when they get it right. They play this sort of, they have that power game, right? But then they also have this incredible French flair knack of offloading ball movements. And it's suddenly everyone just sort of like wants a piece of it. The next offload sticks, next person breaks a tackle, he goes and off they go. And it's just kind of, but then if they want to draw you back into this power game of like maul and brawl and sort of beat you up, they can also do that. It's phenomenal, really.
Again, it's the sort of standard French team where everyone goes, oh, they're French, they're big, they'll tire. You run them round and, you know, if we run them round and move them round, they'll tire and get them off the floor and get them on the floor. They're big blokes. But actually, Toulouse, they play fast, fast, fast. Then they go, right, we'll just slow this down. We'll grind you out with our power game, as you say, like whether it's scrum or even just carry one out, carry one out, carry. They've got big blokes that just get momentum. They can sort of take a breather in those spots and they go offload, offload. Oh, we've made it. We've got the talent to score. And it's like another team that one person makes a line break and then they've got inside, outside options. Dupont's there. Ramos is on the shoulders. Like there's just, you end up with a 3-on-1 on the fullback. And you're like, where have these guys come from? It'd be very interesting to see, A, how they train, but B, you would say it's been ingrained in them from academy days in some regards, just how this, how we play with momentum, you know what I mean? Like it's almost like the Toulouse way of doing it. I know they had that sort of period when Toulouse used to be brilliant, then they went off the ball for a few years. they came back and they got these young guys with, or youngish guys, your Ramoses, your Entermax, your DuPonts, that sort of just know each other inside out. And I guess you only get that from playing together, for training together. You know what I mean? Like that sort of connection they have. They just know each other.
I think it's also, like you say, it's like from a young age, from the academy age, but even from youngsters. I remember at the World Cup, we did this, a few of us players had to go and do a coaching class with some youngsters. And we went out on the field and, mate, these youngsters are running around and the ball is being offloaded. The ball's alive. Like everyone's like, as soon as there's a break, there's like 10 people chasing it to get an extra pass, and the next pass goes again. And I just feel like they've just done it as a young age, where I think in England, you're kind of, I'm not saying it coached out of you, but you're kind of directed to play a different type of way. Where France, I think they maintain that French flair of, you know, the ball moves and it's seen as a thing of beauty and it's maintained, and they're sort of they're very proud of like that French flair sort of tag.
Yeah.
And they encourage it and they get behind it. And I just, like, you look at teams that make line breaks, right? The best teams finish line breaks, of course they do. But a lot of teams can make line breaks but don't finish because it's you know, the scramble and everything like that. But they make a line break, like they score. They just score.
Yeah.
Ball's kept alive, boom, boom, boom. And if they do create a ruck, it just moves to space. It's sort of ingrained in them. It's a way of the way they play the game. It's like football, isn't it? In terms of like Brazil and how they play and all that. It's great to watch.
Yeah. Well, so one thing there, the composure, I think it was Jack Willis, who was outstanding today, but he makes a line break, gets tackled about a yard short, and then the ball's quick, but there's no panic. It's just Toulouse composed. It goes through sort of two sets of hands and they score. Whereas sometimes you watch those games, it's like everyone's flooding onto the ball hard as they can. The pass is too hard and just gets knocked on and the opportunity's gone, where Toulouse are just like in through the hands, they score, and you're kind of like, you know what I mean? Even that, even such a simple thing, but it's actually quite hard to convert because you're a yard from the try line. You're like, oh, I'm going to score. Everyone panics, whereas like they were just like, boom, boom, there's the try.
They make simple things look very easy. But yeah, that's going to be a cracker, actually. Toulouse, Harlequins, it's going to, I hope it's sunshine. I hope it's a dry track and they just go at it. And a high-scoring game, without doubt, that will be.
What are your thoughts on Exeter's performance as a whole?
There's loads of positives from them. I mean, the scoreline is the scoreline, right? And Toulouse were red hot second half. But first half, Exeter mixed it. They forced errors out of Toulouse. They scored, you know, good little tap play, you know, back inside to Roots. But when you come against these absolute almighty powerhouses, which, you know, in Europe, you're probably looking at it, it's Toulouse, it's Leinster, La Rochelle, which we'll touch on that game. When you play these juggernaut sort of teams, they can end up being a blowout, but that's not a reflection of all the effort and all the endeavour and everything that you've put into the game. Do you know what I mean? They just, these teams, you know, we've been there, Coley, where you've played these teams and actually you feel like in many ways you've done loads of good things, but actually the scoreline says that you've been absolutely pumped. So I think, you know, Rob Baxter's an extremely good coach. You know, he'll be, I'm sure, very level-headed about it. And I'm sure that although the scoreline will hurt on in terms of actually the numbers, actually there's loads of positives for them.
Well, that's a great point, Ben. I've been thinking and I've got an idea, but we'll discuss it more after the ads.
Those are the ads, but Coley, what's this great idea you've got, mate? I'm intrigued.
I've been watching a lot of YouTube recently, and as you can see, there's actually a form in the episode description, but I think maybe people should send us their clips of them either playing rugby. It could be a great try, a great scrum, something you'd appreciate, a great box kick, just something, you know, we all love rugby, don't we? So yeah, if they could send us a clip of some sort, we'll analyse the best ones, we'll have a discussion, and then there'll be a prize at the end of it.
Hang on, you've hit me, you've basically gone, you watch YouTube and now you've got this idea that people should send in just random clips of their of them playing. So this is their team and just like their best bits. And
there's not enough scrums on YouTube. So I need team people to send in, not just scrums. Like, we'll open up a bit because obviously we want everyone to be involved. But best clips of individuals or team tries or team scrums or anything like that. Just good rugby, Ben, you know. And then we'll look at it and we will analyse the best. Well, we'll analyse them all, but we'll analyse the best ones. And then I will think of some sort of prize at the end of it.
Coley, I love the idea. For the love of rugby, like grassroots, someone's scored a worldie somewhere this weekend. Someone has scored a worldie try. Someone has had a great individual touch moment, whatever it may be. And you're right. Like, we should break it down. We should, and like you say, get them a little reward or something. So get involved. Send us in. Like, I'm keen for it. I like it.
Yeah. Well, so, say that there's a form in the pod description, which people can use. And then, yeah, the prize can be... Well, Ben, you did a local... you did a session, a training session at a local club, didn't you? So maybe we should do something like that. Obviously, if these clubs happen to be in, like, Australia or the Maldives, that would be also be good.
Can I send in my training clip from my 45-metre drop goal at the angle the other day I hit? Does that count?
We can't just make it like people send in their clips and then you just top them with one of yours, though. It's not really...
I did just think that. Don't know how I've managed to make it about me.
But we'll try it, shall we? We'll just say, yeah, your clip of the week, and then...
We want the love of rugby clip of the week. That's what we want. Grassroots love of rugby clip of the week. And do that. Sounds good. I'm up for that, mate. And as you say, reward-wise, we'll go coach a local team. I mean, when I say local, because we're going to travel, but... I mean, yeah. Going to travel so far.
It's either
going to
be within 5 miles of Leicester, or we're going on a road trip. We're going to, like, Florida. Is there a Disneyland FC, a RFC or something like that? Yeah.
Well, there's got to be somewhere, but we're... I mean, we're all about giving back, as long as it's within a 30-mile radius of our secret studio.
Correct.
Sounds bloody good, mate. Sounds good. Now, did you watch... did you manage to catch any of the women's game?
I did. I watched the first half, and then obviously the Queen's game kicked off, so I was then flicking back and forth. But I saw the anthems. It looked incredibly wet and windy. I was also getting... I'm not going to say. I watched the Scotland coach's interview before the game, and the advertisement board behind him, I was actually starting to feel seasick because it was moving in the wind, and it was just... I was watching it like, someone just move. Oh god, you know, you can't look at things anyway. So yeah, I did. I watched that, and I recorded the end of it, and I've seen the second half recently. But yes, it was another dominant England victory.
It was. They smashed them, to be fair. They made quite a lot of handling errors, actually, so I'm sure that'll be one thing England would be looking at. But when you look at the conditions, I mean, it's the anthem, mate, is honestly only in Scotland could you have that, like, horrendous, like, horizontal rain, wind, awful conditions.
But then, like, it stopped. They pretty much, like, as soon as, like, the anthem stopped, like, the rain stopped, and you're like, cool.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I swear, it always happens up there, doesn't it? It always happens up there. But it didn't hold back the Red Roses, who obviously went on and won 46-0. They made quite a lot of handling errors, and I'm sure that'll be one thing they'll want to improve on. But ultimately, going up and should never shun a win against Scotland, who are improving. Like, they've still got work to do, of course they have, but no, they're definitely improving. And I think, you know, although a lot of people think the Six Nations is a little bit one-sided at the moment, you know, England do dominate, and the other nations, it's, you know, it's their job to kind of catch them up.
Yeah, I think England just, in some regards, have probably... The RFU's invested in the women's game earlier than a lot of teams, and those teams are playing catch-up. And it's true, those teams, like your Scotland's, have to catch... It's not on England to dumb themselves down, and Maggie Alfonsi was commenting on the game at the weekend, or she was pitch side, and basically sort of said, you know, they take two of the game. I think some comment along those lines, because England dominate these games, but it's not for England to dumb themselves down and get worse. It's for the other nations to catch up. And I think they are. You know, you look at Scotland, I think they're invested in their game. You know, they sold out the stadium. They've got, I know there's like three girls in that team that play for Tigers. So the women's game has grown, and it's for the other teams to catch up. And say France are sort of on that cycle of, you know, they're moving ahead, as are obviously New Zealand in the Southern Hemisphere. But the unions have to invest, or you get some hedge fund comes along and buys everyone and sort of like invests in the championship and, you know, tries to level it up, because obviously there is demand for the game. And the best sports, I would say, have the best arrive, you know, the best, every time you watch, like I watch American football or Formula One, it's the rivalries and it's the competitive nature of teams that are neck and neck that make things, and that's what you want in that sport, because that'll really drive the interest and just keep running the game.
No, I agree, mate. It's not for the Red Roses to drop their standard or anything. Like, when New Zealand dominated the men's game for so long, like, at no point was it ever, or for the integrity of the game, like, New Zealand need to, you know, mix their team up and not be so dominant. Like, no, like, England are really, really good. Like, brilliant. Like, they got ahead of the game early. The RFU got behind the women's game, and rightly so. And now, you know, they are very, very dominant. And long may it continue. It's for the other nations to capture them up. It's not for England to try and water it down. So, never shone seeing a great win against Scotland. So, well done, the Red Roses. I'm actually popping in this week, so I'm looking forward to that, Coley. So, I'm going down. I left Penny Hill in the summer, and I was like, I'm never coming back to this place. when we left for the World Cup. I'm like, I'm done. I'm never going back to Peniel again. And here I am. I'm popping down this week to go and do some bits with the Red Roses. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, to get to Peniel, you probably have to travel on the M1. This is the link here. There's a tedious link here, Ben. You'll be on the M1. To get to the M1, I have to drive through Northampton. Northampton played the Vodacom Bulls on Saturday night at 8 p.m. and smoked them. We can discuss the game. We can also, another link, discuss the Bulls' travel plans. One of my grievances with Europe at the minute is the travel arrangement so far of the teams. And I think the Bulls got a bit of a short end of the stick at the weekend, didn't they?
They did. And La Rochelle had it as well when they came back from Cape Town. But let's start with the actual game and then we'll get into the other bits. But the game itself, I mean, Northampton ran riot 59-22. Yes, the Bulls left 13 players at home. You know, Northampton looked slick and, you know, did the job and, you know, raced into a lead. Bulls actually got themselves back into it, but then pulled away again. I thought their strikes off set plays were very well orchestrated. I thought variations in terms of their set plays and the way that they moved the ball and played, and they kind of just like were sharp, like took the opportunities, moved well. It's hard to gauge, isn't it? Because Bulls had so many players missing and all the travel and all that. Like, it's hard to kind of know, you know. But what you got to say is that they create opportunity, Saints, and they are smart with their tactical plays and how they move, and Sam Vesti in terms of what he comes up with. And I thought Finn Smith had a particularly very good game once again. I thought Fraser Dingwall is a huge glue in terms of that back line. He makes a lot of things happen around him with his little intricate passes, little short balls, little balls out the back. Slight home with a great try as well. Like, look, they're dangerous. They're good. And they look like a team that are high on confidence, actually.
Well, you look at the way they play, and I think they know their strengths, the way they should involve Slight Home and, you know, runners like Freeman and stuff like that, or first phase. They know where the opposition's weaknesses are. They know where their strengths are, and they exploit them. And you've got to credit them for that. And you look at the way they play. Yeah, they move the ball around. They've got some great runners in Ram and Hendy, and they're dangerous from all over the park, which we saw, obviously, last weekend against Munster. But they're smart, and they are incredibly well-drilled attacking side. And, you know, Bulls, again, you sort of say that. It was tough for them, but Northampton did what they had to do. And it was always going to be sort of the first half, not tight, but the Bulls never going to... We played the Stormers, didn't we, at home, and the Stormers left all their team behind, and at half-time we're losing because they're going to give their all. They're South Africans. They play a physical brand. They know how to play rugby. You know, it's not like they're just any old mugs. They're still a decent side. Northampton just used their power and their the speed to play around them and through them and pull them apart, really.
Yeah, definitely. I think Sam Vesti's a very smart coach. Like, he kind of, like, Saints remind me a little bit of you know, Ireland under Joe Schmidt with in terms of this, their line out strikes. This is the bit I'm talking about, the line out strikes. So Ireland under Joe Schmidt used to score tries from, like, set plays. So what I mean by set plays, from scrum or line out attack, and they'd have sort of two or three set plays within that, where they'd come back on the where the line out just came from, or they'll go around the corner and set something up and then do little smart balls back inside. And Joe Schmidt was almost like a master of it for Ireland. And Saints almost remind me a little bit of that, like their ability to strike and cause damage and find a chink in the armor within the first three phases of your defensive system from lineouts or scrum is particularly very, very good. And I think that's a fascinating game when they play Leinster, and the way that Leinster defend and how they blitz. And I think that makes for an absolute cracker.
Well, so in that semi, you'll have two teams that are not mirror image of themselves, but they know how to say, they know where, obviously do their study, they know where the opposition's, or they will think they know where the opposition's weaknesses are, and they are ruthless in exploiting those. And both teams, look at Northampton, they obviously got stuck into where the ball's in between off the line outs and in the sort of the seam of the back of the line out. And, you know, Leinster did similar at the weekend, La Rochelle, they know where they were going to attack, and they don't just go there for the sake of going there. If they sense weakness, they go for the kill, and they have the ability to finish tries. You look at Northampton, even Leinster, they're great runners all around the park, and they get a sniff of the trial line, they're taking it.
Yeah, very, very good. They're just good at manipulating space, finding weaknesses, and again, just smart with how they play. So Saints sort of romped home in the end and job done, to be fair. But, you know, like I say, Bulls had 13 of their best players at home. They spent 175,000 on flights. They play Munster back in Pretoria this weekend coming up. Like, that's a lot of travel. That's a bit of a nightmare for them. It does not make it easy.
No. Do you ever watch Harry Hill's TV burp? It used to be moment of the week. This can be Dan Cole's gripe of the week. Europe, the travel is, you've got to give, like, in an ideal world, it's crap for players, probably. You've got 6 foot 8 locks and stuff, whether in business or not, like, making them go halfway across the globe, play a game, turn around, they've got to play with it. You've kind of got to give, I think, this quarterfinal or last, whatever it was, 16 quarterfinal, it needs to almost be more spaced out. I know it's the rugby calendar, that kind of stuff, because you need to give times. You can't have 6 days, 7 days to come from South Africa up north, turn around, go home. And, you know, it's you want the best teams playing their best players and giving it the best shot. And it's, yeah, to leave 13 behind because you've got other commitments. And it's, for me, Europe, ideally, the ERC, whatever, will look at it. I think the Bulls and the South African teams add value to the competition, no doubt about it. But it's unfair for them. The travel just kills you in some regards. And it's, I think, you know, even like La Rochelle having to go from, you know, they went La Rochelle, Paris, Joburg, Cape Town, Joburg, Paris, Cork, you know, that kind of stuff. It's tough. So it's, and it's also, I saw another gripe about Leinster getting their home quarter and their semi at the Viva. You remember we weren't allowed to play our semi-final at the King Power because it was too close?
I do, Dan.
So we had to go to Nottingham. Yeah, Leinster can play at the Croke Park or the Aviva, even though it's the same city. So yeah, there's certain bits about Europe that's always annoyed me, but I don't know the solution. I'm not paid for the solution. I'm not paid to moan either, but I'm going to.
I actually prefer this new feature of Dan Cole's gripe of the week. I'm almost warming towards that more than people sending in their grassroots version of like player of the week, I'll be honest. Because we even say in the intro to the episode, don't mistake having a good sap for being a realist.
In an ideal world, you don't want rugby to have potential holes where people like myself but can pick at it and go, well, that's not good because they didn't do this. You want rugby to be shown at its best at all times. You want the best teams getting the best things on level playing fields. Obviously not total level playing fields because the best teams get home advantage, and rightfully so because they've been the best in their groups and stuff. But you just want rugby to be, you just don't want people going, oh, it's not very, like, this isn't very good. You want all that removed and you want all that thought about and dealt with, so you get the best. You know, we've seen some brilliant games this weekend, fantastic games, but they could have been even better because teams wouldn't have had to travel for halfway across the globe. That kind of stuff. That's what gets me is we're in a point in rugby where we just need to show the best of it at all times.
Yeah. I wonder whether actually you do the last 16 before the Six Nations. So like you always play that last 16 game before everyone then leaves for the Six Nations. And then when actually come back, you're straight into the quarterfinals, semi-final, final. So, but look, yeah, congratulations to Saints anyway. So they're now going to face Leinster. So let's talk about Leinster, La Rochelle, because the last 2 years, obviously, they've both been finalists and La Rochelle have come on top. But I mean, La Rochelle didn't even really throw a punch at the weekend. I felt Leinster just dominated and La Rochelle just didn't get into any type of fluency, any part of their game. I mean, I couldn't work out if Leinster were really, really good or La Rochelle were just really pretty off. Do you know what I mean, Coley?
Yeah, I do. I think Leinster were a step up from where they were against us the week before. I think they managed to break down, you know, the way they attacked, the way they played at their tempo. They controlled the pace of the game. So they were rightfully winners. I think La Rochelle probably, it wasn't their finest. You know, watch the previous two finals, La Rochelle have almost controlled the tempo of the game. They made it like a power game when they needed to. And Leinster took that away from them. So credit to Leinster. Yeah, La Rochelle were, there were times when they sort of got rolling, but I think that at the same time, again, we've said Leinster punished them. They go two tries ahead and you're chasing the game, then you lose a ball, Leinster away, and Leinster know how to play from in front and they will punish you and can easily run away with the game when they make you chase. And that's where I think La Rochelle, the game just got too far ahead of them in the first half, and, you know, Leinster scored a couple of early tries and, well, they even had two tries or a try held up and pulled back and that kind of stuff. So it's, you know, they're always on top and they just didn't, again, they're ruthless. They don't let up. They don't let you back into the game. They kill the game and then keep going.
It took La Rochelle a lot of effort almost to go in at half-time within touching distance, didn't it?
Yeah.
And then straight after half-time, I think they score 42nd minute, they're in, boom. And then you're chasing the game. You become a little bit more loose in terms of what you do. And, I mean, you just don't want to give them that space. But there's a cracking try from James Lowe. I mean, the play where they hit Furlong, who circles it back inside to Henshaw, who then goes out the back to Lama and they pick him off, like just a great try, like their ball movement and their ability to create opportunities. So again, like, hell of a semi-final this at Croke Park, Leinster, Northampton. Like I think it's another cracking, like, you've got two cracking semi-finals.
They all want to play, they can all score points, they're very well drilled, and yeah, you have the potential for two brilliant semis, and you got English representation in both, which is great for us.
or great for the English game, great for the Premiership.
It is. Well done, the English clubs. Well done to Quins. Well done to Northampton Saints with their semi-finals in a few weeks' time. We'll be back on Thursday. Thank you so much for listening. That is the roundup of the weekend.
For the love of rugby.
If you want to drop us a line, get involved with our socials.
Just search for @loveofrugby. And if you've listened to all our episodes and need another podcast, go and find Joe Marler's Things People Do. For the Love of Rugby is ad-free on Amazon Music. If you listen on Apple, you get it ad-free for £1 a week.
See you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.